Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning into the Talking Information Center. Today is Wednesday, August 19th, 2026. I'm Jay, and I will be reading from the Sun Chronicle of Attleboro, the Attleboro Sun Chronicle. First story, new nonprofit takes aim at revival of downtown Attleboro. And it is by Rhiannon Watkins. And it was posted an hour ago. Revitalizing downtown has been a priority for the city. And now a new nonprofit organization has made its mission, launching with back-to-back school events Saturday. The event by Thrive Downtown Attleboro expands on previous back-to-back events that highlighted local business offerings, discounts on school supplies. Though the organization has many goals for downtown, its first endeavor is a free, large-scale family event across the city called Celebrate Back to School in Downtown Attleboro. The event is intended to get first-time students excited and comfortable with going to school and to give parents a look at the city's option for after-school activities. The event will be held from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday and will feature free dances, dance classes, martial arts demonstrations, backpack personalization, Girl Scout and Boy Scout activities, other free activities, and chances to win prizes. As a parent myself, this time of year was always hectic for me, thinking about what to do between 2 or 2:30 p.m. when school gets out and when you have to get to work. When you get out of work. So I really wanted to show what downtown has to offer for parents, said Thrive Executive Director Karen McKeon. I think it's going to be fun and also very informative for parents. At the Attleboro Public Library, students can engrave their own pencils, participate in a school supply swap, and meet public school staff to ask questions about anything school-related. The Attleboro Recreation Department will hold its youth sports activities and arts and crafts and offer information about homework help at the Bartek Recreation Center, 81 Pine Street. A Touch a Bus event will also take place outside the Recreation Center, where students can get comfortable sitting on a bus to take the mystery out of it before the first day of school. The Dance Factory, a small family-owned dance school at 35 Park Street, will host a series of children's dance classes, and Ronin Jiu-Jitsu, 2 Park Street, will offer participatory demonstrations for ages 6 and older. Additional information, events at Balfour Park, the city's museums, and other local businesses can be found on Thrive's website. Thrive formed as a result of the Massive Development Transformative Development Initiative, a state economic development program focused on improving gateway cities through grants, resources, and technical assistance. Those grants for Attleboro began in 2019, funding improvements to public spaces such as the murals in Cuddy Court, the addition of downtown streetlights, and businesses and facade improvements, among other projects. The final grant the city applied for was to have a group incorporate as a nonprofit to continue the work around after the state initiative ended. Thrive started operating as a nonprofit in May, with McKeon, a Kingston resident who plans to move to Attleboro, appointed as executive director in June. McKeon has a background in fundraising and previously worked at Harvard University, Plymouth Patuxent Museums, and Wheaton College in Norton. The board includes several local business owners, as well as library director Amy Rillenberg and Attleboro Arts Museum executive director and chief curator Mim Brooks Fawcett, but the nonprofit hopes to continue expanding membership. McKeon said another undertaking the nonprofit is working on is a sign and facade grant application that will open in the fall to give businesses a chance to spruce up their storefronts. We have a tranche of money that is set aside for businesses if you want to really make your sign more visible, more accessible. If the front of your building needs a little repair, if you want to just put a big flower pot out, you can apply for funding, she said. McKeon said the group, which is still new, is gathering information and hopes to hear from the public. I would love to hear from everybody about what they think downtown needs, wants to improve upon, wants to shine, because I think that it is a remarkable place with so much potential, she said. I think it's very exciting to be in on the ground floor of this organization. Next, Iran and United Arab Emirates ties sour, and other major developments in the Middle East. Iran rejected the United Arab Emirates' accusation that it fired two ballistic missiles that landed in the Persian Gulf as Tehran's parliament speaker and chief negotiator landed in neighboring Iraq for a three-day visit. Meanwhile, France announced that it will expel two Iranian diplomats in response to the expulsion of French diplomats from the Islamic Republic earlier this week. The souring of ties between UAE and Iran comes amid fears of renewed escalation in the region, with no apparent renewed talks between Iran and the United States on the horizon. Here's a look at the latest developments in the Iran war and the wider Middle East on Wednesday. Full coverage can be found elsewhere. Iran denies United Arab Emirates' accusation of launching ballistic missiles. Tehran Foreign Ministry spokesperson Wednesday criticized the United Arab Emirates for accusing Iran of launching two ballistic missiles targeting maritime navigation, but fell into the Persian Gulf. In the weeks after the U.S. and Israel launched a war against Iran on February 28th, the United Arab Emirates was frequently targeted by Iranian missiles and drones, but Tuesday's reported attack was the first in weeks. The behavior is contrary to the principle of good neighborliness and disrupts the ongoing efforts to strengthen trust between our regional countries and prevent escalation in the region, Esmail Baghdadi said in his weekly news conference. Not long after the incident Tuesday, the United Arab Emirates Foreign Ministry said it suspended trade with Iran in light of regional escalations that undermine regional and international peace and security. It comes less than a week after Abu Dhabi accused Iran of firing drones at two tankers operated by state-owned oil companies as they sailed through the Strait of Hormuz. Iran's parliament speaker and top negotiator visits Iraq. Mohammed Bagher Qualibaf arrived in neighboring Iraq Wednesday for a three-day visit while he will meet with Iraqi officials and leaders of an Iran-backed political coalition. Iran-backed Iraqi militias have launched and claimed drone attacks targeting U.S. bases and diplomatic presence both within the country and abroad, piling the pressure on Baghdad, which for years has delicately tried to maintain strong ties between both Washington and Tehran. President Donald Trump last month welcomed his Iraqi counterpart, Prime Minister Ali al-Zaidi, at the White House, showering him with praise. Qualibaf, on Wednesday, praised the country's Tehran-backed militias, which he called resistance in Iraq, describing them as a key component of the country's national power. After years of experience in Iraq, the resistance has gone beyond the borders of the two countries and has become an influential force at the regional and global levels, Qualibaf said. Iran has long relied on its top allies and proxies, notably Hezbollah, militant group in Lebanon, and the Yemeni Houthi rebels in recent Middle East conflict. France and Iran expel diplomats. France announced Wednesday that it will expel two staff members from the Iranian embassy in France in response to what French Foreign Ministry describes as an assault by Iranian security forces against two French diplomatic staff in the Islamic Republic last month. Iran accused the French pair of taking part in a secret meeting with suspects in a major case involving foreign infiltration and interference, Iran's state-run Islamic Republic news agency reported. The French diplomats were expelled on Monday. Foreign Minister Jean-Noël Barrot slammed the Iranian authorities for not investigating what he called a premeditated and deliberate attack. He said the two Iranians will leave Paris in the coming days. Iranian authorities chose to make entirely false accusations against French personnel and fabricate a case of foreign interference just to justify their actions, said French Foreign Minister Jean-Noël Barrot. Returning to local news, Attleboro eyes solar farm on capped landfill by Rhiannon Watkins of the Sun Chronicle staff. The city is considering a new solar farm on capped landfill on Pond Road. Solar farms are ground installations of photovoltaic panels that capture energy from sunlight and connect to the power grid, providing a source of renewable energy for the area. This planned farm at the former Attleboro landfill would not be the city's first one. The first was connected to the grid in December of 2015 and features 2,100 panels on 4 acres off Mossberg Drive. In February 2016, a second was connected, featuring 3,300 panels on 6 acres off Richardson Drive, where sheep were brought in to maintain the grass around the solar panels. The current project would consist of 2,200 solar panels installed on top of the capped sludge landfill at 12 Pond Street. It is expected to provide 1.6 million kilowatt hours of energy in its first year, according to Alex Young, senior developer at Kearsage Energy, a Boston-based renewable energy development company carrying out the project. Kearsage specializes in transforming underused sites such as capped landfills into solar farms. The company has completed 83 projects throughout Massachusetts, Rhode Island, New Hampshire, and Connecticut. In 2020, the city issued a request for proposals to have the solar farm built. An original developer was chosen, but ultimately backed out, Young told the zoning board on Thursday. When the city issued a second request, Kearsage was chosen. The matter is now before the zoning board for approval. A landfill, you're not going to be able to develop much on there, and it doesn't require clearing. So it's both green energy you're generating, and you're not having to cut down any trees or use a site that could maybe be used for something else, Young said. It also requires minimal upkeep, only needing a quarterly visit for maintenance or repairs, he told the Sun Chronicle. Additionally, it is not near residential homes and would not create sound or light disruptions, he said. The proposal is for a 20-year term with the option of three 5-year extensions. The project would generate more than $1.1 million for the city over 20 years through lease revenue, payment in lieu of taxes revenue, and electricity bill savings, Young told the board. We'd be allocating credits virtually from the project to the city of Attleboro accounts at a fixed discount, he said. Because of its location on capped landfill rather than a greenfield site, the project would not require penetrations or excavation. Instead, the panels would sit on concrete slabs on top of the landfill cap. The panels would be fixed rather than mechanical, Young said. Fixed panels typically are used on landfills because they are better equipped to handle sloping ground. They are also cheaper to install and require less maintenance than mechanical panels, which use sensors to track sunlight as it moves across the sky throughout the day. They'll be pointing directly south to absorb the maximum amount of sun, he told the board. A 7-foot ballasted fence would surround the panels. Kearsage is drafting a lease with the city and seeks permits from the Massachusetts Department of Environmental Protection. If the zoning board approves the project, the company hopes to begin construction later this year, with completion in spring of 2027, says Young. In further local news, Norfolk residents demand answers after state probe by Stephen Peterson of the Sun Chronicle staff. Roughly 100 residents packed the town of Norfolk's select board meeting on Monday to denounce the state's investigation's findings of wasted taxpayer money and misconduct by former town officials, with some calling for the resignation of the board's two most senior members. The meeting was held at the Fremont Kennedy Elementary School cafeteria auditorium because of the expected large crowd. The state's inspector general report found the former Department of Public Works director Blair Crane instructed department employees to deliver loam and dumpsters to a former town official's home, failed to follow local and state procedures for acquiring equipment, and bought personal clothes with public works funds. Officials revealed at the meeting that the former town official was longtime building commissioner Robert Bullock. The probe also determined former town administrator Justin Casanova Davis's misused sick leave, putting in for it while on vacation, underreported vacation time, and failed to properly oversee Crane. The select board members also inadequately supervised the town administrator, the inspector general said. The findings suggest deeply troubling leadership, control, and supervisory failures, resident Glenn Hill told the board. A finding of diversion of public resources to a non-resident former town official, where costs were shifted from the former official back onto the town and Norfolk and its taxpayers, is even more concerning. The public has a right to know what actions will be undertaken by the town to address these findings, including how and when the town will be reimbursed for funds and services obtained outside of employment contracts and the law, and how and by whom incremental controls will be applied and enforced in the future to prevent abuse and waste of taxpayer dollars and diversion of town resources to those not entitled to receive them. Hill called on town officials to take several steps to respond to the situation, including releasing more information to the public, auditing all records of reimbursement and benefits paid to the former town officials, and setting up a citizens' oversight committee. By taking actions and recommended by the state and residents, the town will be in better position to regain public trust and confidence, Hill said. The Inspector General's report included 9 findings and 15 recommendations that town officials are now putting into place, said Town Administrator Rob Garrity. The recommendations included pursuing reimbursements from Crane and Casanova Davis, as well as the former town officials who benefited from Crane's alleged misuse, creating a higher level of review for purchases and reimbursements, creating a townwide policy against using town equipment and employees for personal use, adopting a modern digital timekeeping system for town employees that better tracks when personnel are working and when they take paid time off, and designing at least one town procurement official who is certified, designating at least one town procurement official who is certified by the Inspector General. Garrity said the town hired a chief procurement officer in February. "We're going to take additional steps," he said. Beyond the state's recommendations, officials said they plan an audit and pledge to give regular updates on their progress. "We are taking the recommendations very seriously," said Select Board Vice Chair Thais Hickman, the board's newest member. "The town has already begun implementing several recommendations. Policies and procedures need to be tightened up." Board members voted in a closed session before the meeting to seek reimbursement from the 3 former town officials. Hickman said Casanova Davis had sent a letter to the town disputing some of the state's findings, but offered to reimburse the town for about $5,000. He is now town manager in Bridgewater, where officials are reviewing his employment given what transpired in Norfolk. The presentation by officials and the actions they outlined, however, did not satisfy many in the audience. "You are wasting our money. You're raising our taxes," resident Adam Mitchell said. "It's disgusting. It's heartbreaking." Local taxpayer advocate Jack Oliveri called on select board members Anita Meckelberg and Chair Kevin Roach to resign. Members of the crowd circulated a petition seeking state legislation to allow the recall of town officials. "This has been going on for a while," Oliveri said, of the town misdeeds he contended officials allowed. "Transparency and accountability. The board doesn't seem to get the concept. We want all our money back. You need to resign now. This is a very dark time in our town," resident Teresa Fernalden said. "There is a lack of leadership. I don't think we can move forward with the same people." Hickman said she felt her two fellow board members have the best interests of the town in mind. Meckleberg and Roach have worked to make residents more aware of town affairs through budget meetings and a Norfolk Citizens Academy. Resident John Bowman said he experienced immense sadness when he learned of what happened. "We work hard for our money," Bowman said. "We expect town officials to manage those tax dollars. Unfortunately, that doesn't appear to be the case." Tim Kanowitz, a Wrentham resident who rents land off Park Street in Norfolk at a farm, has had a long-standing disagreement with town officials. Said he instigated the state probe. Hickman attributed some of the shortcomings to budget cutbacks in positions such as assistant town administrator and human resources. The human resources position is being restored. Resident Bill Hill blamed part of the problem on residents, including himself. "I was shocked to learn of what seemed to be a lack of oversight," Hill said. "I blame myself and others for not paying attention. All of us need to be more vigilant. It's up to us to pay more attention." Former selectman Jonathan Smith pointed out that only about 100 of the town's roughly 7,500 registered voters attend town meetings. He also urged select board members to hold longer meetings where they can get into more detail on town businesses. "We all have to get involved in this together," Smith said. Registry of Motor Vehicles to Leave Attleboro Office in April, by Rhiannon Watkins of the Sun Chronicle. The Registry of Motor Vehicles office on Park Street remains closed after a water leak damaged part of the building last month, but the agency is already scheduled to move out in April so the police department can expand there. Mayor Kathleen DeSimone said Thursday that a water tank leaked in the basement of the former post office building at 75 Park Street, where the RMV operates. "Crews dried out the area and replaced the tank," she said. The RMV closed on Monday, July 13th, following the leak. DeSimone said she had not heard from RMV officials about when the office will reopen. RMV officials declined to comment beyond saying the closure involves the facilities issue and that they have no timeline for reopening. It is unknown where the RMV will relocate once the lease expires. The agency encouraged customers to use service centers in Milford or Taunton or the My RMV Online Service Center. DeSimone said the RMV will move out of the Park Street space in April, when its lease with the city expires, to allow the police department to move more of its offices there. Police Chief Kyle Heagney said 12 police department employees already work out of the building's basement, adjacent to the RMV office. They include members of the problem-oriented policing team, the traffic unit, and a court officer, among others. Heagney said Thursday that he had not heard about the leak, adding that the police department's portion of the building was not affected. He said the current police station at 12 Union Street does not have enough room for the department staff. "Some employees work out of hallways," he said, "and taking over the RMV space will help ease crowding." Northern Bristol County Registry of Deeds, which occupied the upstairs portion of the building after the post office moved out in the 1990s, moved out permanently in March when its lease expired. Registry of Deeds staff in Taunton said the agency merged its Attleboro operations with the Taunton location. The city's health department has since taken over the former Registry of Deeds space, DeSimone said. Developers seek to revive New England Sports Village in Attleboro, by Rhiannon Watkins of the Sun Chronicle. New England Sports Village, an ice skating and hockey rink on Commerce Way, was once intended to be the first phase of a much larger sports complex. But after the original developers were threatened with foreclosure, they filed for bankruptcy to stop a planned foreclosure auction and later abandoned the project. Developers have recently begun trying to revive the center in what they said was a more scaled-back, economically feasible way. The facility is to be used by local school ice hockey teams. David Butcher, the original developer, proposed then $40 million project to the city in 2014, and construction began in 2016. 16 of the 104-acre parcel. He and his partners built the existing ice rink, cleared the land behind it, built a temporary exit, and constructed part of a bridge that was supposed to serve as the main entrance over wetlands on the property. The original plans called for soccer fields, a pool, a tennis facility, and a hotel. But those plans never came to fruition. Construction stopped in 2019 as financial problems mounted. 12 years after the city first approved the concept, new developer Dharmesh Patel has bought the complex out of bankruptcy and plans to revive the project on a smaller scale. Jack Jacoby, a Coogan Smith lawyer representing the project, said the goal is to develop all the original facilities except the tennis courts and pool. Developers also plan to build only on the west side of the large wetland area on the property and leave the east side undeveloped. Jacoby said, however, that the exact facilities are not yet set in stone, leaving room for other options. Developers also want to change the original entrance plan for the property, a proposal that has drawn mixed reactions from abutting neighbors. The current entrance of the complex was originally supposed to be an emergency exit only, but the developers at the time asked the zoning board to make it a temporary entrance while the construction of the main entrance farther up Commerce Way was underway. The board granted the 2-year-long permit, but when it came time to renew the permits, the developers went bankrupt, Jacoby said. The new developers want to make the current temporary entrance the main entrance with a boulevard design that includes one lane for entering and 2 lanes for exiting, Jacoby said. The design would allow for exiting drivers to use separate right and left turn lanes and improve traffic flow. The original planned main entrance would become an emergency exit for fire and police, essentially reversing the original plan. Developers would finish the partially built bridge, but make it much narrower, with a gate restricting access to emergency personnel. But zoning board members were dissatisfied with a traffic assessment for the project. City planner Gary Asarian called it light and insubstantial and asked for a more robust study. Jacoby said he and the developers would provide one. Some area residents also objected to making the temporary entrance a permanent main entrance. Jean Burchill, who lives next door to the complex on Commerce Way, said she wants the original main entrance to remain the main entrance. She said the current temporary entrance is on a blind curve and causes traffic problems. "We have to look to the right, left, right, left, and then we come out, because it's especially right where the hockey is. It's very limited right there to get out," she said. "Further down, with the original main driveway, is perfect because you have clear access between Country and Tiffany. You can pull up very easily in." Tiffany Street resident Tim Collins agreed. "I've been fighting traffic for 7 years since I've been there, he said. "I just don't think people see the traffic impact this is going to have. It's going to be insane." But others supported making the temporary entrance the main entrance. Brian McCafferty, who lives on Adderley Drive, Lane, said keeping it would prevent traffic from moving further down the road in his direction. He suggested more speed enforcement and increasing parking in the complex instead. Asarian told residents a more comprehensive traffic study will answer many questions and help clarify the best way forward. Jacoby said he expects the permitting process to take through the end of the year. If the project receives approval, developers hope to begin construction in spring of 2027.